can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
Welcome to Bird Calls, everybody. I'm Chris Bozak, your host, as we look into the lives of our wild birds. Happy New Year, everybody. This is the New Year's Day edition. Later on in the show, we'll have Jeff Gordon, the president of the American Birding Association. That'll be a great one. But did you know that in the state of Connecticut, outdoor activities have an economic impact of more than $1 billion a year? I like to start off my shows with a little bit of news from the birding world and the outdoor world. And this release from the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection came across my desk, so I'll read a little bit of it to you. The Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, it's now the DEEP, not just a DEP, but they released an extensive analysis conducted by UConn's Connecticut Center for Economic Analysis, the CCEA, showing that outdoor activities on state lands have an economic impact of more than $1 billion a year. And this represents the amount spent by state residents and visitors on outdoor pursuits such as camping, boating, fishing, and hunting. The study also shows that for every dollar the state spends on the state park system, it receives an estimated $38 in economic activity, and 9,000 private sector jobs are created from outdoor recreational pursuits. Most of that money comes from, fishing licenses and hunting licenses and other types of licenses like boating licenses and camping fees. But pretty interesting, $1 billion in the little state of Connecticut generated from outdoor pursuits such as bird watching. And again, I'm Chris Bozak, your host for Bird Calls. I'd like to thank my sponsors, Wild Birds Unlimited in Darien and Bedford Hills, New York, and also Outdoor Sports Center in Wilton, Route 7 in Wilton. So check out those places, and thank you for their support of Bird Calls Radio. I want to take a look at this week's bird, which happens to be the cardinal. And this week I'm going to combine the looking back section of Bird Calls Radio and this week's bird. So by doing that, I'm going to read a little passage from the book Land Birds Bird Guide, Song and Insectivorous Birds East of the Rockies. Now, I have a very modest field guide collection, old and new, and this one happens to be my oldest one. This one, which I just said the title, is published in 1919. By Chester A. Reed. So 1919. It's going on 100 years old. So here's what he has to say about the cardinal. Noble in carriage, beautiful of plumage, amicable in disposition, and excellent singers are some of the qualifications of these large-billed birds. They are southern birds, rarely seen in northern U.S. unless in cages, for large numbers of them are trapped for this purpose, a practice that is being stopped as rapidly as possible by enforcing the laws which protect them. They are hardy birds, often passing the winter in the northern parts of their range when the ground is covered with snow. They frequent gardens, plantations, and open woods where they glean their food and seeds, berries, fruit, and insects. So there you have the cardinal as it was seen and thought of in 1919. Of course, we still think it's a noble bird and beautiful, of course, but no longer is it considered just a southern bird. Of course, they are in the south, but now they have expanded their range up into New England. So now they're quite common in New England. In fact, most bird watchers, myself included, got into bird watching long after cardinals were already well established in New England. So as far as we're concerned, cardinals have always been here, but obviously, that's not the case. In terms of history, they're newcomers to the northern United States, as Chester A. Reed points out in his wonderful 1919 book, Land Birds Bird Guide. So great book and a great bird. And since this show is called Bird Calls, let's take a listen to what the cardinal sounds like. So there you have it, beautiful, loud, clear whistles, different, sometimes different birds sound a little different, sometimes the same bird can sound a little different. One of the rare birds in which a female also sings the song. Usually it's just a male belting out their songs, but in this case, the female also sings the song. So there you have it. This week's bird is the Northern Cardinal. Be sure and check out birdcallsradio.com for more information about the cardinal. I'll have that updated with more photos and more information about the cardinal. I have written a bird watching column in the Hour newspaper and also the Keene Sentinel in Keene, New Hampshire for, 11 years now. I've written over 600 of them now. But one winter I did a New England's favorite bird contest. I had all my readers email me what their favorite bird was. They didn't have to explain it. They were welcome to explain it, but all they had to do was just send me the name of their favorite bird. And I got lots of responses and lots of different birds came in, but number one from my Norwalk readers, from Connecticut readers, number one was the Northern Cardinal. The favorite bird of all my readers was the Northern Cardinal. In my New Hampshire readers, they chose the chickadee. The black-capped chickadee was their favorite one, but cardinal was number two. And down in Connecticut, the chickadee was number two and cardinal one. So there you have it. A popular bird, and the chickadee was a couple weeks ago was this week's bird. So check on birdcallsradio.com for some photos of the chickadee. And this week we'll have more on the cardinal. But upcoming in this show, coming right up after a couple messages, we have Jeff Gordon. He is the president of the American Birding Association, one of the big groups in the country in terms of supporting bird watching and birds and conservation. So can't wait to get Jeff on the line. So we're going to take a few quick messages, quick break on this New Year's Day edition of Bird Calls Radio. And, we'll find out what Jeff has going on for 2012. What's he got in mind coming up? So we'll be right back with Bird Calls right after these short messages. And we'll be right back with more Bird Calls on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Be ready for the winter season by visiting Outdoor Sports Center on Route 7 in Wilton. Outdoor Sports Center offers full-season ski and snowboard packages for all ages. Ski the slopes with apparel and accessories from Arc'teryx, Patagonia, The North Face, Burton, and more. Outdoor Sports Center, Route 7 in Wilton. Complete selections of ski and snowboarding equipment, rentals, apparel, and accessories. Visit us online at OutdoorSportsCenter.com or call 203-762-8797.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak inviting you to check out birdcallsradio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. BirdCallsRadio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a Contact Me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out BirdCallsRadio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
And welcome back to Bird Calls, everybody, the New Year's Day edition of Bird Calls. Good show already, and it's going to get better because we have Jeff Gordon, the president of the American Birding Association, here with us. Are you there, Jeff?
I am. Hey, Chris.
How's everything going?
Good, good. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. We are going to get into some more meat and potatoes things, but let's start off with why don't you, for the American Birding Association, obviously a big association, what are some of the highlights of 2011, and tell me what you want to accomplish in 2012?
Okay, well, 2011 has been a huge highlight year for me at ABA because I just came on the staff, joined as president here at the very tail end of 2010. So 2011 was really my first year here.
Okay.
And it's just an amazing honor and opportunity to land in this spot. Moved out here to Colorado Springs from Lewis, Delaware, where my wife Liz and I had been living. And this year for us has been in many ways just learning the ropes. It's pretty complicated operation here. We produce a birding magazine every other month, alternate that with our newsletter Winging It. Four times a year, we produce the journal North American Birds, and we have events, and we have a conservation program called Birders Exchange. We have youth programs, plus the kind of just birding and festival circuit and trying to get out there and meet people and promote and all that. So it was a very active year a lot of learning curve for me. But the thing that I think I'm really proudest about is that I feel like this was the year that the ABA really kind of got itself together online and really entered the 21st century in terms of, being on social media and being kind of accessible and responsive. I bet you've noticed this too, that, we just have this expectation now of all these different organizations, whether they're corporations or, clubs or whatever, that we're going to have fairly immediate access, nearly real-time access to people who are making decisions and responsible for, the activities of this company or group. And I've just been very, very happy with the inroads we've made there. I think one thing the ABA was viewed as maybe being a little bit behind the curve on that and being a little bit inaccessible, maybe shrouded a bit, what's going on out there?
Yeah.
And I've really tried hard to, just put that friendly kind of public face on things. And I think that's what I'm happiest about so far, but it's only scratching the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. I work for, my real job is, I work for a newspaper, and a scoop is no longer being the first newspaper to get it in the next day's edition. The scoop now is whoever tweets it out first. Four seconds after the fire starts, you better be on Twitter tweeting out that there's a fire.
Yeah, it is the just the expectation has really shifted, and I just think it's amazing. When you look at how, and applying that specifically to birding, I used to do a program on, rare bird records committees and such.
Mm-hmm.
And you just realize that people used to, I dredged up some old things from the Auk, like in the early 1900s, some reports from Delaware. And, you know, somebody would go out, they would go birding, they would write up what they saw, they would mail it in to somebody, that person would kind of compile it into a report, mail it to somebody else, that person would print it out into a magazine, you know, that magazine or journal would then get into the mail, and, you know, months later, people would find out what folks had seen.
Yeah.
And, you know, boy, now, you know, I've actually heard people sort of take other birders to task on listservs if, like, there's more than, say, like half an hour delay when a rarity is found and when it kind of shows up on the state email list. You know, it's kind of like, it's been over a half an hour.
Yeah,
how come we haven't heard about this?
Yeah. Yeah,
right. But, you know, I think that's one of the most exciting things because I'm interested in so many aspects of birding and nature study and appreciation, but I think if I have a single aspect I'm most fascinated by, it's actually the social dynamic and just kind of how, you know, all of us who care about this stuff, how we all kind of relate and interact. And I think this whole social media and internet thing has just opened possibilities to us that it's like it hasn't even sunk in yet. We're all still sort of in a state of shock.
Yeah, you know? Really. Especially, you know, a lot of bird watchers want to hold on to the old time. So, you know, look out because now you guys are up to date now. So time to change your thinking in a way.
You're exactly right. I mean, there is kind of this curatorial personality that can get attracted to birding. You know, the person that really likes the old records and studying changes in distribution and everything over time. And I don't think that's ever going to go out of style, but it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, definitely how it evolves. And I sometimes think you really almost need like a generation of kids to come up through a new technology before it really comes into its own. You know, I think it's the kids who are out there right now, and boy, they're there. You know, just watching the young birders today and how, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how old you are. I'm getting close to 50 myself, and I remember just how difficult it was to find other kids who were interested in birds. I mean, it virtually didn't happen, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And boy, the teenagers and 20-somethings today, and they're just all in contact, and you know, every once in a while, they let some of us older people sort of lurk on the edges of one of their conversations.
Yeah.
But it's incredible.
Well, yeah, it is amazing.
What they're able to do, because they can find each other.
They can share. Yeah.
Share, you know, the kid that's out there in Iowa can talk to the kid in California who can talk to the kid in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I just think that's tremendously exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. And I'm relatively new to... I got my, almost ashamed to admit it, but I got my first iPhone just a couple weeks ago. And, you know, the field guide is no longer a book you stuff in your back pocket. It's your phone that you pull out of your front pocket, and you got pictures, you got descriptions, you even have what the bird sounds like right in your front pocket now.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, access to the sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's very cool. And, you know, I'm so excited by some of the possibilities that things like smartphones give us to, you know, share information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before I got into being a bird tour leader, I used to work for, like, the National Park Service, worked with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and was into, you know, I was like a park naturalist kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man. You know, if I had been able to have an iPad back then,
yeah.
I mean, I remember setting out for nature walks. Like, I worked at Acadia for a couple summers up there in Maine.
Okay.
And,
nice.
You know, you put your water bottle in, your granola bar, and then it's like, okay, which field guides do I throw in my backpack? You know, how messed up do I want to get myself? And, oh, man, now if you got an iPad and it's got a decent charge, you know, you could show people, you know, all the birds of Brazil in addition to all of New England.
Yeah, and you got your plant field guide right there and your trees and your mammals all in one little place.
Right, and maybe if you've got some kind of internet connection, you know, through a cell tower or whatever, you know, if a question comes up, you know, it's not like, oh, I don't know, maybe I'll look that up when we get back and try to figure out some way to get back to you. Not to mention that you can, you know, people that you've been on a nature walk with, you can, you know, friend them on Facebook or they can follow you on Twitter or whatever. I mean, it's just, oh, man, it is pretty exciting. A little overwhelming sometimes, I'll admit.
Yeah. For us anyway, not for those younger kids you were talking about.
No, I don't think so.
They've got a good grasp of it. So before I lose sight of it, what do you see for yourself and or the ABA for 2012, since it is the New Year's edition?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, one of the traditions of birding and the ABA, which was founded in 1969, you know, had a lot of roots and still today attaches a lot of you know, we have a soft spot in our hearts for, you know, sort of the listing game that some birders like to play. And, you know, kind of the biggest game of all in North America anyway is the big year. And, you know, of course, more and more you see people doing big years in their home state or province or even their county. But so, you know, this January 1st, you know, turning over the calendar and all that, we're really looking at 2012 as being ABA's big year. And what I mean by that is birders have always focused on finding and identifying birds. You know, and obviously, if you're a birder, you want to find birds, you want to be able to identify them. And that's huge. Mm-hmm. I think, though, and I was talking about that social dimension before, that there is a third leg to the stool. And we haven't always been so good at acknowledging it, and that is the ability to recruit and attract and interest other people, to bring more folks into our tent, even if it's in sort of a casual way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hopefully to mentor, to foster, to share. And so what we're doing this year is really trying to get our members to turn around and recruit other members, and we're doing it in kind of a fun, you know, big year style competition. Mm-hmm. And you know, try and get people to think about not only, hey, you know, it's April and you know, there's some southerly winds, and if I go out, you know, I might be able to find a palm warbler over here, I might catch this or that over there, but to also be thinking, you know, if I go to this other spot, you know, I know there's a nice little park, a lake with some ducks, and that's a place where a lot of folks just sort of come out for a casual outing. I could go down there with my spotting scope and maybe a little information that the ABA provides me, and mm-hmm. I could really do some outreach. I could really do some recruitment. And I don't know. I know that kind of thing isn't for everybody, but I really think that folks who maybe got to a point in their birding career where they've seen a lot of the regular stuff and they're sort of looking for their next thing to do. Mm-hmm. Some of us are really good at that kind of thing. And I also want all throughout this year and even going forward to really start shining a light and thanking the people in our community, and they're there. Mm-hmm. They're just not always, you know, we sort of tend to know the people who wrote the field guides or, you know, the really good photographers or maybe some of the people with the longest lists of various sorts. Mm-hmm. There's this whole group of people who are just incredibly skillful builders and weavers of community. And I am really interested in featuring those people and really trying to talk about, you know, what are effective strategies to get new folks in, to get new folks interested? Because, you know, birding can be its own kind of strange little community. Mm-hmm. It can get a little insular sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you know, hey, I think it's fun every once in a while to hang out with buddies, and we all sort of can finish each other's sentences, and we all sort of get all the in jokes and everything. Nothing against that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you go out, you just want to be alone. You don't want to be bothered. You just want to look at some birds and maybe go for a walk. But I really think we've got to start giving prominence and respect to people who can build the community, who can really share that joy of birding. And that's really one of the big directions I want to see ABA head.
Okay. All right. Do you have any means to do that? Do you, which ways specifically do you think you can do that?
One thing that is going to be really cool, are you familiar with birding? wait a minute. I'm confused because, you know, Audubon just this fall did the birding the net. But for the last 11 years, there's been birding on the .net. You familiar with that site?
I am familiar with the other one you brought up, but I'm not familiar with that one.
Right. Birding on the .net is it's a site that was started by a guy who works at the University of Pennsylvania, a birder from the Philadelphia area named Jack Seiler. And what he saw when a lot of birders started to get on email was this need for kind of a central place where all those emails from all those various lists, I mean, I'm sure Connecticut has at least one birding email list, if not a couple.
Mm-hmm,
you know, larger states often have more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And he made this simple little program. He wrote it in a language called Perl, and it would just kind of aggregate this thing. And so what that meant is you didn't actually have to subscribe to that email list and maybe get your inbox filling up with hundreds of emails or whatever. You could just go to birdingonthe.net and check out whatever you were interested in. And really useful if you're traveling, you know, because you may not want to know what's in Minnesota all the time or take the trouble to sign up and get approved or whatever to some Minnesota thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you could just go to birdingonthe.net, look up what's being seen in Minnesota. So that's been a really tremendous resource and very popular. I think about 25,000 hits a day, something like that.
Okay.
And Jack, incredibly, when he, you know, after a little over a decade, kind of decided he was ready to turn that over, approached us, and we just, you know, were beside ourselves happy.
Okay. Well,
about,
cool.
You know, being entrusted with the care and feeding of this thing. And now the first thing we did, and of course, like so many projects like this, has taken longer than we'd hoped, but we basically, it's almost like restoring a classic car where you sort of shine up the outside, but in the meantime, you sort of go in and almost redo the entire engine.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put it in PHP. It's based on a database. And so we're relaunching that. And if you go to Bird I don't know why I'm tripping over this today. birdingonthe.net. birdingonthe.net. It will redirect you over to the ABA's new version of that.
Okay.
And so some things right away, like before, you know, all these different little emails were more or less static. Like if you sort of imagine, it was almost like somebody picking up a bunch of newspaper clippings and putting them all on a bulletin board where you could see them.
Okay.
Well, now this thing is entirely electronic, so it becomes searchable.
Okay.
So if you want to find out, you know, hey, are they reporting king eiders anywhere? You know, you can just search and find that out instantly. The other thing that we're doing, because what's happened is, you know, each of these little, email lists, like Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
and I'm, you know, I'm from a small eastern state myself, and what I always find was that I knew basically everything that was going on in Delaware,
mm-hmm.
but every once in a while there'd be a bird like 10 miles over the line in Maryland,
yeah,
and it could take an amazingly long time for word to sort of jump from one little walled garden to the other.
Yeah.
And so what we've done is to make it very easy as people are combing through their little state things and regional things. You know, you always see some stuff and think, you know, this is interesting to a wider audience. This has broader interest. Well, it's really simple now. You just hit a little button and you can tweet that post, you know?
Okay, yeah.
And then there's a little crawl on the homepage where you can see what people are retweeting. So, you know, what we're really trying to do is turn the birding community loose to kind of, you know, do that little thumbs up kind of like thing that we're, you know, getting more used to from Facebook. And we're really hoping that that's going to kind of make some of the more interesting cream kind of rise to the top so that you don't have to wait, you know, weeks or months or years for some cool thing that people are figuring out or arguing about or some amazing news to spread. It's, you know, it's just going to be right there. So, you know, that's just like one example of how we're really trying to take, you know, this, as I say, this system that was very kind of print-based and very slow, and then it got, you know, pioneers like Jack Seiler, like the folks that set up Bird Chat, you know, these different things, and trying to now recast them in this new social media environment where, you know, we can all, you know, make use of them.
Okay. That is amazing. And, you know, you could look ahead now on January 1st and think of what is coming up in 2012. But on December 31st, 2012, you're going to look back and I'm sure, you know, 100 things you never even dreamed imaginable will have happened already.
Yeah, it's amazing, especially as the years, they do feel like they speed up, you know?
Yeah, they do as you get older, don't they?
Seems a little quicker, but boy, yeah, it really is. When you look back down the path, you realize how far you've come.
Okay.
But, yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but I want to come back, and I want you to tell everybody how to get a career in bird watching, just like yourself.
So, okay.
So we're talking with Jeff Gordon, the president of the American Birding Association, and we'll be back after a few short messages here on Bird Calls on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the Wild, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Be ready for the winter season by visiting Outdoor Sports Center on Route 7 in Wilton. Outdoor Sports Center offers full-season ski and snowboard packages for all ages. Ski the slopes with apparel and accessories from Arc'teryx, Patagonia, The North Face, Burton, and more. Outdoor Sports Center, Route 7 in Wilton. Complete selections of ski and snowboarding equipment, rentals, apparel, and accessories. Visit us online at OutdoorSportsCenter.com or call 203-762-8797.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak inviting you to check out BirdCallsRadio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. BirdCallsRadio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a Contact Me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out BirdCallsRadio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
Well, I like birds.
birds.
And welcome back to Bird Calls, everybody. New Year's Day edition. Happy New Year's, everybody. We're here with Jeff Gordon, the president of the American Birding Association. So, Jeff, how does one get to be the president of the ABA?
Well, boy, I guess there have been a few of us over the four decades, but in my own case, I think, let me see if I don't want to be making any sweeping generalizations and get this wrong. We talked a little bit earlier sometimes about how it's like the, you know, you need that generation of kids to come up who've grown up with the technology. I think I'm on track on saying I'm the first president who sort of grew up as a kid knowing about the ABA. And even though I didn't actually become a member until I was in my 20s, I've just always been aware of it. You know, I probably heard about the ABA for the first time when I was like 12, and I've just always seen it as this, you know, just really cool place where a lot of innovation was getting done. And so I think one thing right there is having the awareness of it. And, you know, and I was really lucky early on to, you know about some of the cool things that this group was involved in. And I started birding pretty young. I was interested in nature when I was a little tiny kid. My mom really got me out. She was a volunteer guide at a local center, but not really a birder. Not so much a birder, really into wildflowers. But when I was 12, I really got bitten by the birding bug, just got totally into it. And really, I think the thing for me that was so significant about it was I realized I had kind of a knack for it. And I mentioned it at that time how hard it was to find other kids who were birders. But it was an amazing way, as a teenager, to get adults to, you know, really value my contribution. I think that's one thing, you know, everybody's hungry for, but kids especially, you know, they want to feel like, wow, the big people, you know, like what I'm doing. And so it was kind of a, you know, I really felt very valued and supported by this community of birders in Delaware I was growing up. And when it was kind of time to figure out something to do to make a living, I just had this very, very strong conviction that I wasn't going to be the one out there doing the basic research, that what I really wanted to do was to be the one to almost be the interface to tell the stories, you know, to connect people with the birds and the ecosystem. And so I just did a bunch of jobs, like as an interpretive naturalist, a couple of neat intern gigs. I got to work in Yosemite for a summer. And and then I did, it just sounds like a cliche going back over it. I went through 3 years of school and I dropped out. I just didn't know what I was doing, so I decided to hike the Appalachian Trail and figure my life out. And I, you know, it's funny, I didn't complete the trail. I only made the southern half, only made it to Harper's Ferry, but I did decide I was going to be a bird tour leader. And at the time, that was kind of weird. I mean, I only knew one person at that time who'd ever taken a bird tour, but I just kind of set my sights on it and was lucky to be hired by Victor Emanuel Nature Tours in Austin. And spent like 12 years taking people around the world, especially, you know, North and Central America. But, you know, got to go to Africa and Antarctica and all this stuff. And that just kind of parlayed itself into a couple other things. I took a little time around when I was getting towards the end of my 30s and worked for the Delaware Nature Society for a couple of years, managing a small nature center in southern Delaware. I did 5 or 6 years as a freelance writer, speaker, you know, really hitting the bird festival circuit pretty hard. And then summer of 2010, when I heard that the job at ABA was open, I think I just basically knew enough people, was kind of in the community enough and had enough experience with all these different sort of aspects of birding community and culture. I you know, I really feel like that's what you know, got me the job.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
You know how we were saying that sometimes you look back
yeah.
and you go, wow, I've really come somewhere. I won't always claim that I had it all mapped out.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I think it really is, and again, another cliche, but it's kind of following your passion, you know, and really being able at times to deal with, you know, some economic insecurity and stuff, and, you know, just kind of holding out to work on the stuff that really moves you, and
yeah.
I couldn't feel more fortunate.
All right. Yeah, well, that's certainly good advice, no matter what field you're in, to just follow your passion.
I don't know. I don't know if the parents would like their kids to hear it.
Jeff Gordon says, Mom, that
right.
I should...
He says I should quit med school. And, yeah, right, okay.
Yeah, I played drums. I always liked drums, and this guy from the Bird Association told me to play drums, so... So now that you are... entrenched at the top of that organization. Tell me a little bit about some of the great programs that the ABA has, and if somebody wanted to become a member, how to do that.
Okay, well, just really simple. I think it's 10 letters, aba.org/join.
Okay.
Get that down. That'll take you right to our membership form, and you can join. And if you want to, you know, we're a mountain timer in Colorado, but our phone number is 800-850-2473, which you may know as Bird. 2473 Bird. 800-850-BIRD.
Nice.
And anyway, ABA is really well known, and has been well known for decades for, you know, just having a fleet of really first class publications, Birding Magazine, Winging It, our newsletter, and North American Birds, our quarterly journal. That's a separate subscription, but anyway. You know, just really, really good stuff. Read those, and, you know, you really will become a better birder. And I, you know, feel very confident in saying that. I think maybe what is less well known sometimes is some of the other programs we have going. And we're relatively well known for events. We do have, you know, a couple times a year, different scale events from, say, a small class of, you know, 15 folks, you know, studying shorebirds or sparrows or something kind of specialized like that, to, you know, bigger things, 60 or 100 people getting together for a long weekend and just really trying to have a lot of fun, see a lot of birds, you know, you just get together and really enjoy each other's company and meet the local birders of an area. We did a fantastic program in October of 2011 in Half Moon Bay, California. That was just a wonderful thing. Looking forward to more of that kind of thing coming up. Two other things I'd point to real quickly. Just up the road in Hanson, Massachusetts, Betty Peterson is the director of an ABA program called Birders Exchange. And Birders Exchange, at its core, its simplest concept, was really a very specialized recycling program. The idea being that, you know, as birders, we get these binoculars and scopes and stuff, some of which are pretty high quality and pretty durable, and yet, you know, use something for 5 or 6 years, and you might think, well, it's time to upgrade, you know, I want to move on to the next thing, but, you know, hey, what do I do? I have these really nice optics. I wish I, you know, could do something with them. And Birders Exchange started as a way to get high-quality used optical equipment from U.S. and Canada folks down into the hands of Latin Americans, Central and South America, where folks are doing bird research, where they're trying to found ecotourism programs. And for a lot of these folks, even if they have some funding, it can be extremely difficult to get your hands on, you know, a really good pair of binoculars.
Good, yeah.
And so we basically collect, and Betty, I said, is the director there in Massachusetts. Folks actually send their donations here to Colorado. My wife, Liz, actually is the one who helps, you know, kind of corral them and take inventory, figure out what is good stuff. And we take applications from people. and programs in Latin America, and then we use volunteer couriers, like folks who may be going on a birding holiday down to Costa Rica or Argentina or wherever, and we match the programs up with a courier. We send the courier a box full of the equipment, and they, you know, along with instructions of how to, you know, deal with customs and all that kind of thing, and we get this equipment into hands where it's really sorely needed. And it's just been an amazing program, you know, a simple, direct impact kind of way that people can, you know, reduce waste and really make a positive difference. And this is a program that I'm really excited about because we're really growing it and diversifying it. I mean, I think that it should be just kind of the first tendril of, you know, a really nice, thick vine, if you will, that, that connects that, you know, sort of gringo birding community with the Latin American one. I mean, you know, the birds, in so many cases, are going back and forth between us. And more, I know, you know, folks in the U.S. and Canada who really know, you know, people that they've gone out birding with when they went to Panama or Ecuador. And, you know, there's, I think it's all to the good if we can start thinking, you know, really thinking globally, as they say.
Yeah, so. you kind of have to. You know, we see our migrants in the spring, our warblers, they pass through for a couple weeks, and we kind of know they're going to be okay up north because, you know, the vast forests and stuff. But and then, you know, we don't think too much about what might happen to them down south, but that's maybe where they're in as much danger as anywhere.
Yeah, and you know, I think sometimes, you know, there's the idea of, hey, you know, you jump on a plane and you go to some far-flung place, and but sometimes I think we're all at our most powerful with, the, you know, our backyard birds and our local birds. And I know you were talking about how much you like, you know, the winter birds along the, the shore and such. And this, again, you know, not to keep hitting this too much, but the social media, the digital technology, I really like the idea of connecting birders really around the globe, and having people understand, like, what's going on in your backyard? You know, what are you seeing? What's passing through now? What's spending the winter? What's breeding there? What challenges are you facing? You know, are you having problems with, you know, whatever it is? And really kind of, you're just developing that sense of connection, because I just think it's one of the greatest things, is feeling like, it, just realizing, as they say, you know, sort of how woven together the fabric is. And when you pull on one thread, you know, it sort of has repercussions everywhere. So Birders Exchange, I just think the potential is limitless to really develop that kind of hemispheric outlook on the birding community and bird conservation.
Okay.
So I couldn't be prouder of Betty in that. And then also, we do a really great series of programs for younger birders, you know, young teens, even a little younger than teens, up to about 18 or so. Each year we do a Young Birder of the Year contest, and that involves the kids doing things like keeping field notebooks, taking pictures, writing, doing illustration or painting. You know, not every kid has to do everything. They get to pick and choose a little bit depending on their talents and interests. But we collect that all, and a friend of mine, Bill Stewart, who lives in Delaware, is coordinating this program for us this year. He recruits amazing judges. Like, we, you know, have people like Richard Crossley and David Sibley and Shawneen Finnegan and Louise Zamaitis and all these just top-notch people who've been doing this stuff for decades, and they, you know, pass around the kids' entries and in a very nice, friendly, constructive way, give the kids feedback. You know, just tell them what's really knocking them out, and maybe make suggestions for, you know, how they might improve their technique on a couple of points. And at the end of the whole thing, we that's really the heart of the program. I mean, everybody who applies or, you know, does it. We have, I think, 31 that are, you know, put in their entries in late 2011, and we'll announce the winner here in a couple of months in March, or the winners. But, you know, it's great, you know, for the folks who win. But really, all these 30 kids are going to get just really priceless feedback and guidance from the leading people in the whole field. And we also do kids camps. We do a camp in Colorado each year, and we've done them in all other kinds of areas. And we also do the Tropic Birds, which is, you know, our logo shows a stylized tropic bird.
Okay.
And so we send youth teams sometimes to compete in things like the World Series of Birding, Cape May, New Jersey, or the Great Texas Birding Classic along the Texas coast. And I got to tell you, if you look back over the last couple of decades and look at our youth program alums, it's going to read like a who's who of, you know, folks who are really, I mean, you know, people who have discovered species of birds new to science, people who are writing, you know, fantastic field guides, who are leading tours professionally, you know, some of the folks who work on eBird for the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. It's just been amazing. And and those are kind of the, you know, this quote unquote stars who stick with it. But I really get excited sometimes because I used to do some of these camps and things like this as a counselor. And there's kids who you don't really, you know, do this as a career. But I just think the idea that one time when they were 14 or 15, that they spent a week in the woods somewhere with a bunch of their peers who were just totally excited about birding. I just have every confidence that that is going to make a difference for the rest of their lives, and it's going to make a difference for birds.
Okay.
So, you know, I just think that's a great, great program that we're involved with.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we certainly need a generation behind us to keep it going. And now we talk about beginning birders, whether you're a young beginning birder or an older beginning birder. I know you have some thoughts on the responsibility of established, not necessarily high-ranking established birders, but anyone who is, you know, beyond a beginner. You feel strongly that those types of birders have a responsibility to kind of bring those beginners around. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, and I mean, I guess I'm getting, you know, it's somewhat of a personal thing, but I just feel like I was helped so much by people who are friendly and willing to be patient with me when I didn't understand, I didn't know. And I think sometimes birders have tended to be a little bit insular, a little bit kind of keep to themselves, and, oh, I don't know. I mean, yeah, let's face it, we do sometimes have a reputation, and the ABA itself sometimes has had a reputation for being a little bit, you know, competitive, elitist is a word you'll hear sometimes. And I just think it's such a tragedy because to me, birding is the ultimate shared activity. You know, if I get some great bird, beautiful flock of eiders or, you know, a beautiful common, you know, a beautiful bald eagle sitting up there or something like that. Hey, if I've got room, I can set up my scope. I can show that bird or those birds to 1,000 people. And every one of them can get a charge out of that. And, you know, so many things we do, they consume stuff. They take up a lot of resources. And birding, yeah, you know, there's fuel consumed driving around. I know that. But, you know, birding is just an amazing thing to share. And I just feel that, you know, a lot of birders, they would just, you know, turn white as a sheet if they saw somebody doing something to a bird, like flushing it or harassing it. But sometimes people will say things, I think not even realizing the negative impact it can have on beginners, like how discouraging people can be if instead of sharing our knowledge in a positive way, if we're kind of dismissive or, oh, you don't really know what you're talking about. And believe me, that can leave scars. And I don't know. Sometimes you hear people say, well, I don't really want a whole bunch more birders. You know, I always, I feel like the woods is crowded enough.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, I you know, it's a reality. We live in a society where resources are allocated according to demand. And if we get birding more popular, it's not going to be a matter of we're going to be stuck in the same places. We're going to find more places being developed that cater to us, that cater to the birds. And to me, it's just a win-win. And so I am just, you know, so about reaching out and recruiting and expanding our tent, and just really sharing that excitement. It's just so exciting to be out there, to see and hear birds, to feel in touch with the rhythm of the seasons, feel connected to processes that have been going on for eons. And so I guess I'm, you know, a little bit of an evangelist for it.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, you never know what great things that beginning birder is going to go on to if you're, you know, if you support them with it. And, you know, if you squash that, they're not going to go on to any great things. You can pretty much be assured of that.
That's right. They go back to shopping at the mall.
Exactly.
Nothing against the mall, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got just only a couple minutes left. So quickly, tell me, you know, you have, you know, you've got writings, you've got photographs, you've got podcasts. Tell us about some of the, if someone is interested in hearing more and seeing more about what you've done, how would you find that?
Well, my personal website is jeffreyagordon.com, JeffreyAGordon.com. And I've got links there. You can see some video podcasts that Bill Thompson III, who's editor of Birdwatchers Digest, and I did for some of the recent Peterson bird guides, links to, you know, pictures I've taken and things like that. And that's one way. You'll also see that my personal blog stopped, like somebody's watch in a car crash when I took the job at AVA. It ended.
Yeah, that happens.
But we have a terrific multi-author blog, blog.aba.org, which, you know, you can check out for free. That is an amazing way to sort of get into the community. We've got on Facebook, we've got a couple of groups under ABA, and so all those ways are ways to start catching up with me personally and with the ABA in general.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, unfortunately, we're out of time. Seems like we just started.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we, you know, I don't think Bird Calls is going anywhere, so we'll have you back on sometime. We'll get into some more stuff.
I would love that.
All right, great. So that was Jeff Gordon, the president of American Birding Association, ABA.org. Check that out. A fascinating guy and a fascinating organization. And that's about it for this New Year's edition of Bird Calls Radio. Happy New Year's, everybody. I'd like to thank my sponsors, Wild Birds Unlimited in Darien and Bedford Hills, New York, and also Outdoor Sports Center on Route 7 in Wilton. So we'll see you next week. If you missed the show, check out birdcallsradio.com. All the archives are there. And we'll see you next week on Bird Calls Radio here on 1490 WGCH.